Don Welch.
Are we talking about, Don, are we talking about being more restrictive than that? I want to know why, if that is the case, why you want to be more restrictive than the adult standard?
Senator, I don't know if I'm being more restrictive, less restrictive, or simply differently restrictive. So I'm not making a substantive argument in terms of what the adult standard is. Kids are not simply small adults, number one. Bail is not available. We use a different standard. We're not in a criminal process. What we're trying to do is to arrest the behavior immediately, and we have a different philosophy at work. It very well may translate into more restrictive. The irony is that in this business, when we were with more, shall we say, broadly stated detention policies, the standard litany complaint about the juvenile court was that the kid was back on the street before the police officer could write his report. You can't have it both ways, but it seems to come with the territory that those kind of complaints are generated. We are talking about a person who has conducted themselves in a way which is self-destructive in a way, in addition to being destructive to the community. It is, by the way, not a 72-hour, but a 24-hour judicial hour standard that we are saying has to be applied by a person in my position until the child gets before a judge. The judge can scrutinize that and, on the basis of the standards that are here, make a decision pending further investigation. I simply come down with the proposition that the juvenile court is not the criminal court. It ought not be. And sometimes it'll be more liberal, sometimes it'll be more restrictive, and I would submit it is simply different.
Well, see, that seems, I hate to say it, but see, that's the problem with this whole area. And I'm sick of it. I can't get a hold of any of it. I mean, it just seems like every time we try to do something, we say, well, it's just different. Well, I'm trying to get it and compare it with something. Now, I know how we treat adults. And when we treat adults a certain way, at least let's have that as a standard. And I need to have some comparison as to why we would treat them more liberal or more restrictive. Now, if you can do that, and I don't mind doing it, but let's talk about it directly and not just sort of say, well, da-da-da-da-da, because I simply cannot get hold of. I know how we treat adults, and to me, and maybe I just have a misconception of it, but that is a standard with which I am familiar, and I need to know why we treat them differently. And if I could just have some reason for it, but it doesn't help me to say, well, it's just different and so forth. Now,
Madam Chair?
To me, the adult standard is, I thought that what we're trying to do is we're trying to treat juveniles a little better than we treat adults. I mean, we're trying to be more caring. And when you tell me that we're going to be more restrictive, then I really need to know why. We're going to treat adults, I mean, juveniles, in a more severe manner than we're going to treat adults.
Court. Madam Chair, Senator Hill, the reasoning of the United States Supreme Court in the Shaw versus Martin case, which was the preventive detention case, was basically as follows. A juvenile, unlike an adult, is not an independent actor, regardless of involvement with the criminal system. A juvenile is in custody of parents, ordinarily, and a juvenile's activities are restricted by the parents, and when the parent's control fails, the state can step in. When we're dealing with juveniles in this situation who have committed acts which would be criminal if committed by an adult, and under the guidelines that are laid out in this bill, when we are able to conclude that the normal control which the parents in our society are expected to exercise is insufficient to keep the juvenile's conduct consistent with the norms that we as a society expect, that the state has a right to step in and exercise control in the place of the parents. And for that, that was the rationale of the court in saying that that preventive detention for a juvenile is measured by different standards than for an adult. An adult is inherently expected to be able to act in any way that he or she chooses until the criminal laws of the state are violated. That is not true of a juvenile.
I remember something about that decision, and the reason for this seemingly double standard is why you're beating up on kids is more so than you are on adults is because they've violated two standards. An adult has violated only one, that being the laws of the sovereign state. the juvenile has violated the custody and sanctity, if you will, of the home, as well as the laws of the state.
Madam Chairman, everyone's quoting Shull versus Martin. I think maybe we ought to read that. I don't think it would be the broad as this bill is proposing. Again, I'm not opposing some preventive detention, but I think we need to have the safeguards and standards there. And I don't believe there are here. And I don't believe that the policy decision made by this legislature in 1983 was in anticipation of a Supreme Court decision. It was made because we thought it was good policy, and the history of detention in the state from 1975 to 1979 was one of filling our detention centers, filling our state training schools to the point that we didn't have any room left in them. And we're about to do it again. Why are we going back and doing again what doesn't work? And if we're going to do this kind of a thing where there is a need, let's be very, very careful we don't commit the same mistakes we did. Let's take the time to write a careful kind of preventive detention bill that's going to assure that there's some parity with adults, some taking into account the difference between adults and juveniles, and that there's some safeguards in the system so that the poor guy that's working the night shift, not getting paid very much, has to make a decision, can make a decision that's the right decision instead of the safe decision, which is to lock them up. And that's been the history of detention in the state forever, until we allowed them by statute to put the burden the other way.
Okay, I think we've had the articulation of both sides pretty clearly. Let me also suggest, I'm going to raise my amendment if we get that far, and I want to bring it to you. It originally was drafted as a proposed amendment to 356, but it's meaning to be 562, and that says the juvenile departments of the county shall report to the Juvenile Services Commission, and I would cross out the Legislative Assembly, I guess. The frequency with juveniles are detained pre-adjudication in excess of the initial 28 day, at least as a minimum, would require them to make a report about how many people are being held over here when the judge decides to extend that time. So I'm not sure he is a yes vote on this bill either.
I wouldn't want to assume that after all this.
Yeah. I guess I'm interested in what people care, what your pleasure is, folks. Whether you want to work some more on it, whether you want to vote it up or down with the amendments we have been presented. We have a hand in grossing. Version. We have my little amendment, which calls for reporting. We have Jack, who's maybe come up with some language for the additional 28 days.
Yeah. I have found that, yes.
Okay. Let's turn to page 2 for now to make sure we get that on the record.
I'll start off by reading to you the adult statute.
We're working on sub 7 there on page 2.
The adult statute provides that, except as provided in ORS 136-295, a defendant shall not remain in custody pending commencement of the trial of the defendant more than 60 days after the time of arrest, unless the trial is continued with the express consent of the defendant. So the operative language for the issue that we're discussing is unless the trial is continued with the express consent of the defendant.
What is the first exception that's called for at the very beginning of that section? 136-295,
and I believe that is non-releasable offenses, murder, attempted murder. And I think treason is in there someplace too.
Juveniles similarly held for those.
The 60-day rule in the adult system does not apply to murder and attempted murder. So you would probably want to make the same provision with respect to juvenile law.
I would think so.
Although those situations would
not always, but ordinarily be covered by a remand situation at any rate, too.
Remanded to the adult suite.
But not always, so that.
They might have a 14.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think we want to get that in there probably.
Yeah. And then why would the juvenile, why would the system not be able to deal with the juvenile's offense within 56 days? Short of a capital crime where you might, I can understand it might take a longer time to get it ready. Why might you need more than 56 days to deal with a kid?
Don Welch, Clackamas County Juvenile Department. The unacceptable reason could be docket problems, and I'm leaving that out of it.
That's not acceptable.
The acceptable reason could be that unusual case where you have a very complicated psychological study that's necessary. I can think of a homicide case, which was not a murder case, where we had to spend significant time evaluating. I don't remember how long that case took, but, Senator, I'm trying to think of the kind of variable which would come into play. And almost always, in my mind, it would be to develop an accurate picture of the child's psychological makeup. And it would tend to be in cases which, although non-lethal, might be substantially serious, such as serious arson cases and the like. It would be the exception, certainly, much more than it would be the rule.
Would that be more likely to occur in a juvenile situation than in an adult situation?
Senator, I can't speak to the adult situation. I don't know how much pre-adjudicative evaluation goes on in the adult system. A substantial part of what we characterize as intake process in the juvenile court is not only determining whether you have the legal power to prosecute, but whether in the psychological and social context that's the appropriate way to approach the case. So I have a hunch it's different. And what I'm suggesting to you is that some of the delay that I'm talking about is frequently, for instance, at the behest of defense, who want to utilize the state resources to properly evaluate their client. So I have reasonable comfort with the proposition that this would be something which would be entered into jointly by way of an acknowledgement of the need for extended time rather than something that's being imposed on the defense by the system.
So what you're suggesting is that we essentially do the same as the statute that applies to the adults, except we have 56 days instead of 60, for no particularly good reason, but why not? Yeah. But in other words, for murder, it's different. Beyond that, it's 56 days unless the child and the child's parent consents.
I don't think you would do parent at this point.
The child is his own party, and I would, and in those cases, all should be represented, and I would think it should be the child.
And it's termed defense in the adult standard, so I suppose that's enough.
With the consent of the defendant.
Defendant, yeah. Okay.
If the defendant is a 12-year-old kid.
The child.
The child.
Use.
Yeah, you don't use the word defendant, but if it's a 17-year-old, I can see that. If it's a 12-year-old, I don't know. I suppose the child, would that fall to the guardian then in a situation like that?
No, the 12-year-old.
Senator, there would be a lawyer representing the interest of the child,
yes,
in that. I can't conceive of the situation not including a lawyer. So as a practical matter, the moving force would be in the control of that individual.
That's right.
Okay, are we agreed that we're going to add that and we're going to leave the no more than additional 28 days, and we'll add the adult language to that?
It would just essentially ape that statute,
right,
making the appropriate.
Madam Chair, let me get into the record rather than paraphrase it, the entire exception. The exception I referred to is 136.295. That statute provides ORS 136.290 does not apply to persons charged with crimes which are not releasable under 135.240, and that refers to murder or treason, or to persons charged with conspiracy to commit murder, or charged with attempted murder, or to prisoners serving sentences resulting from prior convictions. So if we're going to parallel it to the adult language,
okay, but I guess I'm not interested in lifting the whole thing.
Well, I guess we need to decide which of those we wish to lift. I think those that relate to murder.
I guess I'm not even convinced we have to lift anything. If there's a, you know, if they don't bring those people in and they want to waive it, there's no reason. I don't think you have to make, unless I'm wrong, I think you just allow them to waive the 28 days if it's okay.
Allow the child to waive it. Otherwise, you could go another 28, waive the 56.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And if the child doesn't waive it through his lawyer, then even if it's a murder and if there's all kinds of psychological problems, get on with it. That's what you're suggesting.
Well, if you're not going to do that, you may as well go back to enumerating all the things in the front, on the front paragraph, like Tom
was talking
about.
I'm not worried about how to write it. I just want to get to where we think we ought to be and whether we ought to have a certain class of offenses which would allow longer detention, regardless of the child's consent, because of the nature of the offense and the need, perhaps, to take greater time to prepare for the hearing.
We have that discussion. I want to discuss for page one rather than for this sub seven, because it's...
Madam Chair?
It's likely that we're going to use it. We're going to need it more on the... that applies overall.
Yeah.
Than something that is non-exclusive over here on sub seven, which may occur only rarely. Corey?
Madam Chair, Mr. Welch and I have just been talking about this, and we think if the language is included relating to trials continued with the express consent of the child, that will cover the situation. There's no need to enumerate. And I would suggest a language which says, may be extended for no more than an additional 28 days, comma, or longer if, or an additional period if the trial is continued with the express consent of the child.
I think that's appropriate.
Okay.
I hear no dissension on that.
Okay, no, except it's not a trial.
Right, but we're...
adjudication.
Okay. We've fixed up seven if we decide to move ahead. Jack, you've got that language, and we've got it on tape. We're back to one more additional. Let me ask whether you think it's worthwhile if we ask the juvenile departments of the counties to report to the Juvenile Services Commission, and I would, again...
Madam Chair.
People objecting to that?
No, I'll move that.
Okay. Senator Brenneman has asked that we include that. It's drafted in concept form by committee counsel, dated 4/11/89. Okay. Are there objections to that, to Senator Brenneman's moving of that amendment? Okay, got that one taken care of.
I've got it.
Senator Shoemaker.
That's comic relief, but certainly not at the magnitude. This,
yeah, on page one.
Page one, between 13 and 14, says any felony crime against persons, which is a plural, or property. I think you need person singular.
You could easily
you wouldn't want somebody raising a technicality, you'd have to get more than one person.
Person?
And shouldn't it just say a felony against rather than any felony crime? Isn't that a redundancy?
What about another person? That's what line 11 said.
Only on yourself.
Other side.
Well, the legislative council had said any felony crime, so I just leave that and then would suggest that we take off the S. Other objections to it, just say person or property.
There's such a thing as self-abuse, you know.
Right, we can fix it. He's been here too long. We do degenerate. There is a...
guilty.
Okay. No one is objecting to removal of the S. Now we have an amendment which I'll set aside for the moment. We have yet another amendment.
And that is entitled Proposed Amendments to Senate Bill 562, April 11th, 1989.
Bring another chair.
The request of Multnomah County, and that's in your files.
Oh, boy.
And it looks like this.
April 11th, Proposed Amendments to 562. We need to folks identify from when... entered, oh, mine doesn't have entered.
No, I got that.
Great, thank you.
Howard Plank, Public Affairs Director.
I'm not finding it, but I'm not.
Well, they're probably in your, in the actual original files here, somewhere in 561, 562, I didn't see it here.
Here it is, writing, yeah, underneath the paperclip.
Under the paperclip.
No, is that, that's not it, that's just testimony.
Is this it?
Is this?
It looked like this.
Requestable, no, I don't have that.
That's not in there. I apologize, you want me to get off the phone?
How much are you paying, Jack, if you?
It's a good discussion.
Okay, why don't you come up, why don't you say what you want to do, Howard, and then we'll.
Okay, I'm Howard Plank, Public Affairs Director for the Multnomah County Department of Human Services. Basically, the question that still remains, irrespective of whatever philosophical issues you have to wrestle with, is who's going to pay for it? These are issues that were raised in.
Glad we brought them here. Save this one till the last.
An issue close to everyone's heart, I know. What has been proposed as amendments to 562 that's before you, there are basically two reasons for it. First, the bill in its current and potentially amended form is still an unfunded mandate and has and will have an indeterminable but probably significant fiscal impact as far as county detention operations are concerned, more significant, admittedly, for the larger counties than the smaller counties. That is the thinking behind the amendments that are before you. If the language in the amendments is familiar to you, it's because a bill went out of here about 2 weeks ago, Senate Bill 591, emergency release for jails, and the language has been essentially lifted from that. And essentially what it proposes is establishing a safety valve for juvenile detention facilities attached to, as an amendment to 562. The language essentially establishes a procedure by which a Board of County Commissioners, in consultation with a number of individuals, District Attorney, County Counsel, Judge of the Juvenile Court, would establish a capacity limit for the juvenile detention facility. When 95% of that limit is reached, it triggers an emergency, a notification of an emergency of essentially the same parties. 48 hours pass. Time is allowed to resolve the emergency, and if the emergency is not resolved in 48 hours, the juvenile judge triggers a release mechanism by which the daily population is brought down to below the limit that was originally established by the board. One thing that needs to be mentioned is that you have precisely the same issue with juvenile detention facilities that you do with adult jails. Many of the facilities in the state are looking down the barrel of conditions of confinement litigation, and there is almost no better hedge against that than having an emergency release mechanism on statute. And that is in part, as one of the counties that is concerned about conditions litigation, that is part of the rationale that these amendments are before you. But it does have the effect of making the bill revenue neutral.
Along with everything else, it's rather unusual. Senator Hill.
No, I was just. How many twists can this thing take?
There's a lot of cross currents.
Adults, juveniles, now detention, and plus Brad Swank had something.
Brad Swank wants something? Oh, bring up yet another chair.
Why don't we all just trade places?
Actually, it would have been useful having we sort of set them aside once again, probably, but there are.
For the record, my name is Brad Swank. I represent the State Court Administrator's Office, and we just saw Mr. Plank's amendments to this bill.
tonight, and although they mirror, they may well mirror the provisions in another bill, there are two interesting provisions about his particular amendments. One, they put judges in Section 8 of his bill, subsection 1, in an advisory capacity as to the appropriate capacity for the jail. I didn't mean to use capacity twice, detention, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. And then, so in one instance, judges would be advising the counties as to what their appropriate detention capacities are. On the second page, there's a mandatory provision that basically requires judges to review or to issue orders to release a sufficient number of juveniles to reduce the population of the facility to the adopted capacity. And there is no particular standard there as to how they're going to do that, and to some extent it appears to be requiring a judge to, in an almost ministerial fashion, carry out a predetermined plan established by a different branch of government without particularly the exercise of discretion, I'm not sure, but that's my first impression of these amendments. And as I say, I just saw them tonight.
Howard, you want to respond? We did, I don't know how closely you parallel it to the other.
Well, it parallels the language of 591 very closely, and in fact parallels the procedures that are often ordered involuntarily under federal court order when a county is subject to suit as a result of conditions litigation situation that we have now in Multnomah County. It's not in essence a carte blanche for basically it triggers an order that the judge says very open-endedly, release kids in your facility and get it below the cap, but some process has to be gone through to make a determination about which kids pose the least threat. And the usual way that occurs is through a matrix and a set of procedures that dictate which kids, which offenders go. So I don't personally see the conflict between branches of government, but there may be a legal issue there that is beyond me.
Don, a quick comment, and then we'll
Every county should have an escape valve system. I think if it is administrative, and whatever it is, I don't think it'll be part of this bill. I mean, that's the brief comment. There's a lot of troubles with this in terms of its specifics, but each county is going to have to work out a resolution, and I might remind the group that there is some case law suggesting that a court cannot order that which is not budgeted. And so whether this is something that is going to open a floodgate of detentions that a county must accept is, I think, debatable and certainly not anything we should assume.
Respond to that by saying that's never tied the court's hands before.
Thank you. Well, folks, we're back to the pleasure on this bill. If you want to set aside, move any other amendments to the Hand and Gross bill, get it any kind of shape, I'm willing to. It's time for us to kind of either decide we want to move it.
Are we to discuss the Multnomah County proposed amendment or leave that for another day?
Well, that's your choice too. But Senator Brenneman has a comment.
I'll move this Multnomah County amendment. It's consistent with what we did the other day. I don't have a problem with it.
I guess I have some questions at least. This is probably what. Is there a constitutional standard relating to conditions of juvenile detention?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, the constitutional standards that I'm familiar with have been set in case law.
Juvenile
detention standards, that is correct.
Okay. They've dealt with that separate from adult incarceration.
Correct.
And they've reached a similar conclusion.
They've reached conclusions. I wouldn't attempt to compare the conclusions in the adult system versus the juvenile system, but I know that there are clear references to case law when constitutional issues of confinement are raised regarding detention facilities.
So I suppose we ought to change the word conditions of incarceration to conditions of juvenile detention, and at least to be consistent with the judicial cases you're referring to. Then the other, the one standard then that's posed here is to release those that pose the least threat to public safety. Mm-hmm. Now, there are two reasons for detention. That's one of them. The other one is to be sure the kid is there when you're ready to deal with him. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't we somehow work that second standard in here so that your first test would be public safety, and then you'd fall back to a second test, which would be those who could be released under the first test but are the least likely to run away or whatever?
I'd have no objection to that. There also will be offenders in detention who are post-adjudicatory detention, who are in possibly as a short-term condition of probation or in response to violation of a condition, and they would also be subject to the conditions.
Right, which is another good reason why it perhaps mm-hmm. ought to be a separate bill.
I'd have no,
It deals with the other mm-hmm. as well. But whether in this bill or in another bill, I think probably
the issues the
points
same.
Need to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Senator Hill.
Madam Chair, I really don't feel that the people before us have really done everything that they could to bring this bill into form. I mean, we're just all over the place on this bill, and I think that they have a duty to bring things to a point, and then we make the decisions, but I just don't see that. I mean, we're all over the place on this. We are talking about language now that's not LC, and there's just no agreement, and I just think that if they want this bill, then they should be able to agree, maybe not come to total agreement, but they should be able to agree on